better to present this, Larry Nisswender, on vacant positions. So I hope that
he's vacant.
Keeps the crowd numbers swelling. Mr. Treasurer, we're pleased to have you here. We thank you very much for your time.
Speak for yourself.
And now the presiding officer has arrived.
Where's the music?
That'd be you today.
Welcome to our committee, sir.
Well, thank you. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon. It's a pleasure and honor to be before you this morning. I haven't been in this room since it's been upgraded. It's very impressive. Let me just start out by saying I appreciate the fact that we have an opportunity to talk to you today about a few things that are really near and dear to our hearts, one of which is being able to pay our bills on time and to actually have the money to pay those bills, and secondly, saving money for the state. We want to talk to you briefly about the cash needs of Oregon, and we had a discussion last session, or the first special session. I keep thinking that went on for quite some time. First special session, and asking for authority because we were running into some cash issues relative to the fact that the state's revenues were continuing to fall and we had bills to pay. And in that capacity, we'd asked for authority to issue tax anticipation notes, which we will give you a little brief background on what those are, what that means to the state, and really how that might impact as you go forward looking at the next budget, some of the concerns and needs that we're going to have in the next biennium. Further, we wanted to talk to you briefly, too, about the state's credit rating. Again, something that's very important to the state in keeping our costs down for Oregon. As we look forward and trying to build more infrastructure and paying for those, this is the time in which we want to be very mindful about how we approach the finances of Oregon, which don't impact negatively the state's credit. I just want to briefly say that the cash issue for Oregon has become a growing challenge for the Treasury. And I say that only in terms that this has been not only related to the deficit that has been we've experienced from the last biennium and the slowdown in the economy, but it really is attributed to a few other things as well, one of which has been the growing size of state government and the need to pay out, make our payments, particularly to K-12, which have grown over the years, having smaller ending fund balances, which has been another trend, all of which have really driven the traditional mismatch between revenues coming in, which are, again, it's a timing issue of expenditures and revenues. That has gotten to be a bigger and bigger challenge for us, and that's why we want to give you a briefing on where we sit today and where the next biennium we will again have probably another opportunity to go out and borrow using tax anticipation notes to make sure that we have the liquidity and the cheapest way to make sure that we have the liquidity to pay our bills. With that, I think, we're still technology. We're still working on the technology. Darren Bond is the head of the finance division in my organization. He will talk about the cash needs of the state. And then Chuck Smith, who's the head of my debt management division, will provide some detail regarding the tax anticipation notes, how those work, how they are accepted in the marketplace, and then also give a briefing on the state's credit rating. So, Darren, are we getting close?
I'd be more than happy to talk to the committee. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury. I'll talk briefly about cash flows and then turn it over to Chuck and let him talk about tax anticipation notes. If you look at the first chart that we provided, which is the 103 biennium, the one with two lines, you'll see that top fuchsia line is the cash flows that we have experienced this biennium and expect to experience for the remainder of the biennium. That lower dark line are cash flows that we would have experienced had we not issued the tax anticipation notes in May of this past year. You'll note that even after issuing the tax anticipation notes, we ran a negative balance in the general fund for basically the entirety of the biennium. We'll continue in that position until April of this year, when we'll see a brief uptick, getting our head above water for a short period of time due to the tax receipts in April. we'll dive right back down in May when we repay the tax anticipation notes with our June tax receipts, expected tax payments in June, bringing us back up nearly to zero. We won't be at zero or above in a cash position because we're expecting the budget to be balanced to zero. The budget's balanced on an accrual basis.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, could we just hold up a moment until we all get the documents that are being referenced so we can keep up with your presentation?
Good idea.
Thank
you. Especially since we don't have the overhead. What else would you guys like? The treasurer is actually their IT specialist.
Well, I'm sitting in the middle of it.
It's a budget-saving issue.
I mean electricity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It starts here.
Absolutely.
Budget, Ken.
You bet. Consolidation within the department.
That's correct.
Okay, I believe we can continue.
Okay, so again, we're on that chart that has the two lines running across starting in April and then going on through the rest of the biennium. So that ending cash position in 2001-03, of course, becomes the beginning cash position on the next chart, which is 03-05. You'll see once again we expect to experience a negative cash flow over the course of experience negative cash flows and be in a deficit position over the course of the biennium. You'll also notice though that the magnitude of that deficit in 03-05 is significantly less than the magnitude of the deficit in the current biennium. In fact, the peak deficits we expect to experience in 03-05 will be less than half of what we've seen in 01-03. So we are improving in the position, but still by virtue of beginning from zero and continuing that, leaving no significant ending fund balances, the general fund will be in a negative cash position for the biennium. Of course, that will provide us an opportunity to use the tax anticipation notes that we use this biennium, again next biennium, to be able to go to the capital markets and experience a reduction in interest expense for the general fund. And that's the picture of the cash flows that we expect. I'd be happy to answer any questions, or we can have Chuck talk about tax anticipation notes.
Chuck?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Chuck Smith, Director of Debt Management for the Oregon State Treasury. I passed out, you received a one-pager here on tax anticipation notes, and I'd just like to run over that with you.
No.
Tax anticipation notes are essentially a cash flow financing to address a mismatch between the receipt of revenues and expenditures for operations. So it's a tool to sort of answer the problem that Darren just discussed here. One, it is a cash management tool. I think it's important to notice that its TANs are used only for legislatively authorized and budgeted expenditures. These are short-term instruments. They're 13 months or less, and they mature within a biennium. Well, we get them rated by the bond rating agencies, and that's to ensure good marketability and therefore reduce the interest costs. They provide tax-exempt income, and they're widely used across the United States by public bodies, and they're also widely used in Oregon, especially by school districts, to help even out their cash flow needs. They're sold primarily to those folks, for instance, risk-averse institutional funds and individuals that really want a high-quality, tax-exempt, short-term investment, and they want great assurance that they're going to be paid back in a timely fashion, both their principal and interest. Because of this low-risk profile, investors and rating agencies look for key credit strengths when it comes to TAN issuers. And these include, and especially, a balanced budget and cash flow forecasts that demonstrate the ability of the borrower to repay the TANs on maturity date. In addition, they want to take a look at a few other things, including the state's liquidity position. Of course, they're going to be interested in legal issues to make sure the note is binding on the state. And also, they're going to be looking at other temporary borrowable resources that could be available to repay the TANs if, for some reason, cash flows were not sufficient to repay the TANs themselves. Cans were used for the first time in the state this last year. They were authorized in the 2002 first special session under Senate Bill 1002. And the state issued last May 1st $778 million in Series A cans. These are due May 1st, 2003. We received very strong, the highest ratings on our cans. And this is because, first of all, the underlying long-term credit strengths of the state, but also because of the short-term nature, they mature within the biennium. They're certainly not in violation of the Oregon Constitution, and they're authorized by specific statutes. And the state has authority to use temporary internal borrowings to repay the TANs if expected cash flows are insufficient. So TANs provide the tool to answer the problem that has been identified here with respect to cash flow deficits.
Might add that one of the reasons why we turned to TANs and asked for that authority was that it was a cheaper way for us to maintain this cash need. And again, Darren, who manages this part of the department of the banking side of the state, we had typically borrowed internally against funds that we had, but this proved to be a much cheaper way, given the size of this. One, we had to go external, and two, the cost was cheaper for us to do it this way, and hence we came to you last special session, or the first special session, and asked for that authority. And again, we executed that in a way that maintained a strong credit for the state. We got the best interest rates possible, and again, I want to thank you for giving us this, because we were able to make a May payment to schools, which was the critical reason why we had this problem of not potentially making that payment, because we didn't have the cash to do it. So, anything else you want to add on that, Chuck?
I'd like to ask a question, if I may. I appreciate the presentation. It's very helpful. I think that we have to have a clear idea of, you know, the importance of this particular committee, I think this session, given our cash flow situation. I guess if I get Randall or Chuck to summarize for us why it is so important for us to have a balanced budget, or at least a perspective, good look at a balanced budget, not in September, not in October, but we actually have to get our work done on time. We don't have the luxury of, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is we don't have the luxury of going to become the most famous legislature in history by going longer than any other body. We don't have that luxury this time. And I guess I'd like some confirmation that because of our cash flow situation, we have to have a balanced budget in the immediate offing, or otherwise our ability to issue these TANs apparently is somewhat compromised.
Well, let me just start out by saying, in order for us to issue these notes, we have to have a balanced budget, and Chuck can speak to the market requiring that. And maybe part of that answer to Mr. Chair is that, in addition to, it's a question of timing. When are we going to need to go to the market? And perhaps Darren can answer that part of it as well, so, which addresses when you're going to need to have your budget done. So, Chuck, maybe you want to explain the balanced budget part of it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think financial or a balanced budget, first of all, in the big scheme of things, it demonstrates the capacity and management of the state to manage its financial affairs so that it follows its own constitution and demonstrates to the market that Oregon is managing its financial affairs. And interestingly enough, each one of the rating agencies have always given high marks to Oregon for good financial management. A balanced budget is part of that. But especially if the unbalanced situation would lead the market to believe that instead of doing cash flow management to manage the timing differences between receipts and disbursement, you are doing deficit financing on a short-term basis, it's going to cause alarm because, one, they're concerned about repayment in a timely fashion. You may have to rely on other resources that potentially could not be there at that moment and so forth. So it's a demonstration of good financial management, and it's a demonstration that we're not doing deficit financing through short-term note kind of basis where we're going to have to continuously roll these notes in the future.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Our expectation is that we'll probably go out for TANs as soon as the budget's done. And it's, I guess a lot of the timing issue is how much you want to spend on interest expense. The sooner we issue TANs, the sooner we're able to enjoy that reduced expense, the reduced interest expense we'll be able to capture by going to the capital markets. The funds that would land the general fund money internally are investing in taxable instruments, and we're able to go out in the tax-exempt market and get significantly lower rates. So the longer we go borrowing internally, the more it costs the general fund. And
our next big issues for the school payments, I assume, coming up here this beginning of the summer, is that correct?
Right. With the smoothing of the tax of the school payments, now there's payments May, June, July, August. I think actually now there's 1 month that doesn't have a school payment, but it escapes me which one that is. We've seen that significantly smooth the expenditure patterns for next biennium compared to what we've seen in the past.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note that from the day one we borrowed the $779 million, and there's been no reduction anticipated throughout, and you anticipate actually borrowing more. I have a question about that. Sometimes these TANs, if we had some shorter term ability to borrow and roll them, we might get better interest rates as we went along. I'd like to know something about that. And then the second thing is, how are these tax exempt when they're being used for operations, ongoing operations of the state? I guess I must have had a misunderstanding relative to an obligation. I recognize it's a general obligation of the state, but how is it that these are tax exempt for the operating costs of the state?
Let me tackle that. Representative Butler, the tax code provides a lot of exceptions for various kind of instruments, and they provide exceptions for state and local government to do short-term financings of their cash flow if they meet several tests. One of the tests, if, for instance, 13 months or less in duration, so they're not selling 20-year bonds to pay for this year's operation. So it's 13 months or less. There's tests that you have to meet to make sure that you're not borrowing more than you truly need to meet your cash flows, cash flow shortages. And in the normal kind of, they're sold with marketable documents and that sort of stuff. But those are really the two basic kind of measurements. And it's just an exception in the tax code to allow operating notes for local governments and helps them smooth out cash flow on a short-term basis.
And the other question, Mr. Chair, was these must be sold for a period of much more than 6 months, or are you rolling the $779 million at this point, because it never changes. It's never changed on your graph. It's never changed from the $778 million from day one through May of 2003.
Well, Representative Butler, they were one-year notes. They were issued on May 1st, 2002, and they mature May 1st, 2003.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Bates and Senator George Morris, and then we should probably move on.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just a couple of quick questions, and give the answers later. We want to get the committee's time. One, I'd be very interested in seeing what TANs really does cost us in real dollars for 03, 05, and comparing that to what you have to do if you had to go to the capital markets so we can see the savings. And then the larger question really is the policy question. Many businesses have seasonal fluctuations like yours. Actually, mine does. Our way of dealing with it is not to get a line of credit from the bank. Our way of dealing with it is to put enough in reserves when we have the cash come in, and we invest that. And then towards the end of the year, as it peters out, we come up to a zero again. To move to that kind of system would be very difficult. Can't do it now. Understand that. But that savings of interest payments would be significant, I would think, and I would think the savings on the other side of actually bringing more money in would be significant, too. I'd like to see the swing on that. If you had the cash reserves sitting there when they came in, you'd gather interest on those for the states. You'd reverse the entire situation. And don't answer that now. Just if you can bring those figures later, I'd like to see them. Thank you.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My question is this. You folks indicated that folks are going to have to take a look at where our budget is. We're going to call it a balanced budget, but it's a 14% increase. We have a state to the north, Washington, who's just a little over 7% is what they project their revenue to grow. I'm just looking right now at California for 03, 04. They're projecting 5.6. When you read below what they say, they but actually you would question that because it appears they think their economy is very, very soft. Based upon the fact that there's, if I were evaluating Oregon's budget, and I was going to determine whether I wanted to loan somebody money based upon their income projection, I would take a look at to the north and to the south, and if I were making that decision, I would estimate their recovery faster than ours based on history. How do you think we're going to be evaluated when you compare the size of our estimated revenue relative to what most folks are thinking is not actually going to occur? I know that's very hypothetical, but yeah. I guess you could help me here.
Well, Senator George, we had that same type of forecast last May when we issued these. And by demonstrating, one, a balanced budget and also cash flow forecast that demonstrates your ability to repay the notes, layer that on top of still a good, solid AA credit, even though it's on negative outlook in the state, gives investors and rating agencies the reason to consider that a 12-month note from the state of Oregon is an extraordinary high-quality investment. In fact, we received the highest note ratings from all three rating agencies on our last notes, and we would anticipate that same type of rating again, given the circumstances that we're talking about here.
Senator Morris.
I'd rather these tax anticipation notes were first issued in 2002. The state did not have need for short-term financing previous. If you were to look back in the last 5 years, what kind of typical cash balances did we enjoy? And what's behind my question is, to put it in perspective, the magnitude of the deficit short-term financing that we're doing now.
Go ahead, you can get a story.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, the main difference, the biggest difference, is the fact that we don't have any ending fund balances anymore. And that's why we will continue to expect to have to look at these deficit balances, because we don't expect to see significant ending fund balances. In the past, we carry fairly large. Here it is. Excuse me.
Now we can
it
begin.
Came to life. Right. We carried fairly large ending fund balances, which provided a cushion, and which I think speaks to Representative Bates' issue. And if we had a ending fund balance of $700 million, or a beginning or ending fund balance of $700 million, and we carried that cash cushion through the biennium, we wouldn't need to borrow any money to cover the deficit for you. But because we don't, the structure of the budget and the timing of revenues versus the timing of expenditures throws us into that negative cash position, and that puts us in a position of having to manage it.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Treasurer and your staff, you said that the alternative to the TANs would have been borrow internally, which I guess would have probably been some of the dedicated reserves of the state, and that would have been more expensive. And you also indicated that we're going to have a balanced budget before we go out for TANs again, and probably we need to go out before the end of this or close to the end of this fiscal year. Can you quantify at all? I'm not expecting anybody to do this immediately. What the cost will be in terms of, you know, I mean, even on a monthly basis, if we go out and bother trying to balance this budget in terms of the type of borrowing you might have to do if you don't have the TANs alternative, if we go into like, if we go in past July 1st and we go into August 1st or September 1st, what the cost might really be to the state?
We could get that number to you, and I know that'd be very helpful as you're starting to put this budget together to figure out what that's going to, first, to know what it is going to cost, but secondly, to anticipate the difference between the two and the timing by which you need to get your budget done. And we'll get that back to you, as well as Representative Bates' question.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your taking the time,
Great.
Treasurer, to come on by. It's important for us to have the context of the immediacy of our discussions, the need to move forward on 0305 and get our job done in a thoughtful manner. Thank you.
If there's anything else you have any questions after this, please call us. We'll answer them as best we can. So thank you.
Okay, I'm going to actually, the next item was supposed to be performance measurements on the agenda. I'm going to break with that in case members have to wander off for one reason or another. Something that's extremely important, but even more important is to make sure every member of this committee understands our principles and process, that first sheet that we handed out. It's come to my attention there might be some confusion, and I think we need to clear that up before we can do, frankly, anything else. I guess I would just say that you've had this from before. You know what? I'll read from this. Pretty simple. Basically, as you know, our growth assumptions, as was alluded to in this revenue forecast, is a little different than what the governor assumed in constructing his budget. For the sake of consistency, we're going to recognize the fact that there's an opportunity for revenues in the state of Oregon, general fund revenues, to grow to $11.4 billion. However, because of our extremely prudent nature, given my co-chair and vice chair and myself, we are only going to budget services and programs to a 10% level. Okay? So instead of 13, 14% growth rate as is assumed in the governor's balanced budget, we are asking this committee to balance a budget to a program and service level that is at least 3% below that. And that's this ending balance they're talking about. The co-chairs would like to have a $300 million ending balance when we are done our budget process. That's about 3% difference there between that and the governor's budget. There's an additional 1% that you've talked about in committees, subcommittee, that we would also like you to find some reductions, some efficiencies, some programs that no longer need to continue given our situation, for an overall change from the governor's forecast of about 4%. Okay? He's predicting a 14% growth rate. We're expecting probably about 10%. We want to have at least, out of that 4% differential, 3% or $300 million is supposed to be going into an ending balance. We've got some disturbing news today in a leadership meeting about the likelihood of this March forecast and maybe even May forecast being down, contrary to what we heard, a week ago?
Yesterday.
So this is very real. It's very ugly. The tax measure that went down is the tip of a very bad iceberg. Opportunity for us to do anything is very problematic. So we need to be moving forward and being very thoughtful on it. Any confusion on those numbers? Any confusion on what your targets are and what they mean? And please speak up, because I'm sure everyone has thoughts.
Yeah, question, not a confusion.
Senator Dukes, question.
It's not confusing. It's just, will that 10% be reevaluated? And if so, when? At what point do you foresee us knowing for sure and being able to move budgets?
On the sheets, you do have these sheets, and we can give them to you again if you don't have them. But it does talk about future forecast adjustments. And in both the March and May forecast arena, when those forecasts come out, and we actually know, and it's, as you remember from the special sessions, you really don't know until that forecast is given you, because they've changed overnight in some cases, in some of those special sessions, literally overnight. But we will review the target levels in March, for sure. Okay, as soon as that forecast comes out, the co-chairs will be reviewing those targets, probably with some of your input, frankly, and make adjustments.
Can we reasonably expect then that we will be working budgets but not moving them out until after the May forecast?
That is correct. The current thinking, and we're still trying to gel this together, the current thinking is that we will have budget hearings, both from agencies and your public testimony. That'll go through probably mid April or late May, or excuse me, late March, early April. We will then have a pretty clear idea of what's going on. No real work sessions. We will probably have a period of some intermediate work sessions to have you ask the questions or get the answers from the questions you raised during the public hearing process, and then probably again, not maybe what we did last session, is you'll come to some tentative conclusions about how you want this budget to look, but there'll probably be one or two other items that you'll have a lingering question on that we'll ask the agencies to get you the information, and that will be wrapped up in a final one-day work session before we put this whole budget together. Senator Devlin and Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would a way to be to understand this be that by reducing from the 14 to the 10% level, first the first three and then the remainder one in terms of where you'd like the subcommittees to be, and you're saying that that will end up in the ending fund balance, and that's being done because we think the estimates are overly optimistic, and the reality is probably that there will be no ending fund balance, you know, because that's you're putting away 3 to 4%, which you don't actually anticipate may come in. So the reality is, by doing that, in the end, there may be no ending fund balance if the estimates are actually overly optimistic.
Senator Harper, you'd like to comment on that?
I think the overarching budget principle here is we sign a die with 3 points in our and we adjust targets.
Yeah. If necessary, but the March forecast comes in, we go 3 points below that.
Yes, sir. If we can think of that from here forward, we've got to leave the building with 3% in our pocket. Have to. We're going to be working. You know, we just have to.
And also add to that that based on the input I think all of us have received, many of you have thought that the 10% growth factor was too generous, even though it is less than the governor's balanced budget. We won't have any problem if subcommittees find additional reductions and reduce that growth rate, if you will, to some lesser number. The other approach that we've outlined for you is to try to get agencies to prioritize in list of their preferences what it is they do. So in the event the forecast does change, if it goes down, you've gone through that work and we'll just know where to make the cut line. If, on the other hand, you know, wouldn't it be nice if the forecast went up, we have a ready and available list as to what the add backs are.
Senator Morris.
This suggestion would dovetail with Representative Miller's comments, but I think our cause would be advanced if we thought in terms of scenario planning. You know, it's been my experience that when you're planning budgets, you put it in a range of, you know, worst case, kind of mid-range, and best case. And if we were all consistent in our subcommittees in looking at those scenarios and targeting to the amount of growth, 10% doesn't appear to be reasonable at this point. So maybe the worst case is there's no growth. It's zero. And that we ask the agencies to come to us with their plan as to how they're going to manage their department with zero growth. And that be part of our process. Otherwise, I can see us really getting stalemated, if you will, down the road when this process, if it continues to decline. So as we're going through this, if they're thinking all along, how am I going to manage my department if there is no increase in revenue?
And I'll answer that one, because you got to look and go back to the process we have here, and it's very important that you ask the agencies for their prioritized list. Your backup safety valve, and the agency's backup safety valve, so we're not scrambling with a whole new budget, you know, in March or May, is they are supposed to have a prioritized list. I want to know from any subcommittee chair, any full committee member, if an agency comes before you, and I'm not talking about the little health licensing boards, an agency comes before you and does not have their prioritized list, they will be dismissed. They will be dismissed, because to get to Senator Morris's point, is the way we do this, we are going to have a 10% target right now. Every committee must adhere to that, or we'll have chaos. However, within that target, they're going to have a prioritized list of things above and below. And as the if the economy tanks and it's looking bad, the prioritized list will start eating away at those items that they have decided or you have decided you want to fund. And it will be understood by the agency, by the citizens outside this building, and by yourselves as to what's going on. Senator Morris, follow up.
I think that's an excellent approach, but I think there are activities that are embedded within all of these things that these departments do that might not rise to the level of being classified within that priority list. For me, I would be more comfortable asking them to be thinking in terms of how they're going to manage a zero, do the prioritization, but also be thinking about how they're going to manage with zero growth in that budget.
We'll take that into account. Let's see, who is next? Senator Carter, and excuse me, Representative Butler, Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chairman, recognizing that human services is not a science, and of course you want us to stay within the parameters of the 10%. However, how do we deal with the incidences of higher levels of unemployment and the consequences of more people coming on the human services role, the health plan, and all of that kind of stuff? And so back to Senator Morse's point, even if we were to look at zero kind of standard, we would still have to deal with the high incidences of unemployment. And I especially, I've always had a love for looking especially at rural Oregon, who is hardest hit in more ways than one in terms of high incidences of unemployment. I think if we were to stick to a zero growth pattern, but at the same time try to look at 10%, if wherever we get it from, that we would miss the opportunity of even greater levels of hunger as a result of higher levels of unemployment.
Yeah, there's one thing it's called, I think Senator Carter makes a very good point. We can budget all we want. We can talk about moving numbers and abstractly deal with this and that. We're talking about real people, real situations, and I think we'll have an opportunity in a future full committee, probably a month or maybe a month and a half from now, to stare what we're doing in the face and decide if this is exactly what we must do or can do or whatever. It'll be a real tough exercise. Yes, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to seem negative, but I'm going to be negative. The concern I've got is that once we turn loose of these budgets, and we've identified X amount of efficiency and even a 0% growth budget, and we've identified that that is to be taken in administrative issues as opposed to those lowest levels of service delivery, my concern is that once we turn loose of the budget, it will basically be administered by the CEO of this state and the department heads pretty much from a top-down driven program. And I'm very concerned about that. Now, that isn't what I'm not going to spread that negativism other than just to you folks today. I'm just concerned about that. But I'm looking at the forecasts that were given to us. Yeah, you're welcome. BAM says they're still projecting an 18% growth. That's from the Office of Economic Analysis. And that the governor, his budget shows 13.6%. It's my understanding that doesn't even include some of the compensation roll-up issues. So the 13.6%, if we're going to, and let's call that 14%, that's the 14% growth. If we're going to bring that down 4%, then you still have compensation issues that you're going to have to pull out of there, too. It looks like to me that you're looking for, and I need to have a fix on this. I need to know if we're after the difference between 18% and 10% plus, well, that would be 8%, plus 3%. Looks like to me that's an 11%. I visited with some of Senator Harper's staff the other day, and the indication is, in just rolling out some of the numbers, that you might have as much as a $1 billion shortage, and if you run an 11% times the gross general fund revenue forecast, that's about $1 billion. And that's what it looks like to me that we're going to be short. So it looks like to me that you got 8 plus 3 is 11 if you're going to try and end up with any cash at all or even a break even. But I just need to know, and maybe when we start crunching out some of the budgets, once we have rules, I just need to know if 11% cut is going to be enough to get us where we need to be because of the roll-ups that agencies are going to come in with of their compensation issues, which are not reflected in any of the budgets.
Well, the 0305 is reflected in the budget. Some of the 0103 compensation issues are things we're unfortunately going to deal with. Those have been negotiated contracts. We don't have a tremendous amount of movement. But I appreciate where the good representative is coming from and his concern about the target levels that we have set. But just so everyone understands, the 18% figure includes the kicker returns and pension returns. So that is not really actual growth in the budget. So the actual growth is, as the representative pointed out, 13.6%. That's what we had the big presentation from the forecasters. That's what they think is a medium range scenario. We have indicated some skepticism, and to be prudent, we're knocking it down by at least $300 million. That's our 3% ending balance. And because we're even more concerned, we're taking another $100 million down. So we're knocking it down a fair amount. Is that enough? I think everyone here is raising the question, maybe, maybe not. The other flip side of that question is how far can you go before there's no point in having a state government? And we have to think about that. And there are a range of opinions, I think, on that whole issue. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is helpful. Not really fun, but helpful. What would also be helpful would be a similar type of consistent briefing issue thing on lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds, so that especially in lottery funds, which I'm sure will have different projected growth rate than anything else. We've got other funds like in transportation where the gas tax is the real driving thing, and that is going to operate on a different type of a growth rate than general funds. So if you maybe some consistent guidance in terms of how to deal with all the other funding levels too would be helpful.
Not even this is Representative Hansen raises a good point. This is just general fund lottery numbers we're talking about, but certainly if the committees want to look, there are, as you'll find out in your subcommittees, a lot of the other funds have a significant general fund component from a different agency, so you'll want to look at that. We would encourage you, and the analysts are already aware of this. They've talked with the co-chairs and vice chair about that, and we'll be dealing with that issue. The last question on this. One other thing I'd like to say, another point that seems to be a slight bit of confusion around is the agency presentation. I think your subcommittee briefings, you got a big handout that talks about format for presentations to subcommittees, and it lists about 8 million things, orientation and background, and a whole bunch of stuff, an agency overview, summary of governor's proposed budget, and it's about a 3-page document. Okay, the goal of the co-chairs, each subcommittee chair can do what they want, but the goal of the co-chairs is you're not going to get all that presented to you. In the past, that was pretty much presented to you. That's not happening this session. Let me just finish if I may.
Okay.
This is information that you will have available to you. The agencies must be prepared to answer any of the questions in this document that you have. Okay, that's what they need to have. However, when they present to you, what we would prefer them to do, so as not to waste your time, is to have the 5 basic questions in front of them that they're going to answer that they were directed to in the letter that Ken and Teresa sent to them. And those questions are why the agency exists, how the agency has been performing, how the agency uses its budget, and what can be expected in terms of the outcomes of its budget request. In other words, what are the performance outcomes they're going to see? Those 4 questions should be the first thing when they sit down at the witness stand, start talking about. And I would hope, and like any quasi-judicial hearing, you would have the criteria, these 4 things right in front of you, and hopefully the subcommittee chair would make sure that the agency presentation is on track. Now, you will have hopefully a bunch of questions because I know you're all workaholics and will have read their budget and the LFO analysis beforehand, and that's what I want you to spend the time on, getting to the meat of the matter. If this revenue forecast is too optimistic, we have to get down to brass tacks, like Senator Morris is talking about, some agency-wide things they need to do, not just prioritize programs. That's the way you're going to get at it, hopefully. So is there any confusion about that? Yes.
Not confusion, but just a point of clarification. On the prioritized list that we're expecting to see from the agencies on the what they see as their prioritization for providing services, is that going to be a separate document? Is that one of the things that will be brought forward as a part of this? There'll be actually just a green bar list or something that prioritizes the budget items?
Yes.
We hope.
And if not, we need to know about that. The answer is yes. Senator Morris, again.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want
to... inquisitive guy, aren't you?
Excuse me?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I just I didn't want to...
That's very helpful.
...point too much,
sure.
But it seems to me that this process, my observation so far, is that this process is one of departments coming in and fighting for their position. I mean, it's very clear that they're fighting for their position. Their position right now is the governor's budget. None of us believe that that's actually the case. But I think if we can internalize that process within them, where they're coming to us and we're going to ask the question, how are you going to manage your department if the revenue projection is not, you know, the rosy 13.6%, but it's 5% or it's zero? So that they're telling us, none of us have the ability or the time to go into the inside of those departments and figure out how to run them. We can't do it. But if you can internalize the process where they come to us and they're prepared to tell us, this is what we can do if we have a 5% revenue growth, 2.5% per year, or we have zero, or we have 10, whatever those marks are that we say that they should be looking at, I think we'd be a lot further down the road than us trying to figure out how to beat them at their game. That's my observation.
Well, maybe I haven't made myself clear, and I apologize. I will talk to you afterwards about the process that this group of co-chair, when you're co-chair, will do it a different way, okay? But at this point in time, we're going to be doing it this way. Well, Senator Dukes,
can I add to that?
Yeah.
Answering. If I can just follow up a little bit on the answers. We are expecting the subcommittees not just to accept their list of priorities without your feedback. If you cared to change the order of priorities, given your expertise and information, or ask the question, how are you going to make do with no growth, that's absolutely appropriate. This will be a budget that the governor has provided a map, an indication of where he'd like to go, but this committee will make the decision along with his guidance as to where we do go. So you're very much in this process of developing this budget.
Senator Dukes.
Yeah, some of the agencies don't seem to understand the process yet. Some of us had the really exciting opportunity the other day to listen to the same presentation three times because they gave the overview we told them to give them, then they gave the presentation that we told them to give them, and then they gave the conclusion that we told them to give them. And they all looked alike. I mean, it was nice of them because originally, for the overview, we got pie charts. By the time we got to the presentation, they were into bar charts. They all said the same thing, but they don't seem to understand that they can consolidate it down to a presentation, or maybe they're not distinguishing the differences between the overview and the rest of it. And I just figured by the time we got to the big agencies, we were going to be there a while if that was going to happen. Yeah. So
that's good feedback.
Try to get that through.
We'll try and send another message.
Yes, and they need one because Senator Dukes is wrong.
Okay, good comment.
Before we get all born.
All right, sorry to belabor that. Sorry to be a little hardcore, but it's real important you understand what we're doing and everyone operate from the same page, and there'll be more confusion, I'm sure, as we go along. It's okay. We'll readdress it and make sure we're correct.
One other thing, too. Reflecting back on what Senator Carter said a while back ago about some needs may spring up in agencies that just need to grow some more in relation to others. But we hope we do when we assemble your recommended additional savings is to be able to, as a full committee, go back and look at those areas of special need where if we have recouped something, we can apportion it to those who are really in need. And that's what I think we ought to do, is not be afraid to shift from... You're not all restricted to just one little tunnel vision look at a one program area. We have to build this budget of reflecting the needs of all of the budget requests throughout the state.
Senator Harper?
Yeah, I just want to
I'm going to give you my two cents, Kurt, on how we develop principles and process. And this year, more than any other year in recent memory, the rubber meets the road at the subcommittee level. The three chairs, I think you'd be surprised at how much in agreement we are on every little thing except buying coffee. I lost that. But you're going to, the organization and structure is such that you're going to get a target. You're going to get an overall target for your program areas, overall target. You take each one of those agencies and you ultimately make the bottom number match up with what those targets are. They'll be shifting based upon fiscal realities. But you have to, in your committees, get down there and do the work. We're not going to tell you where to go, what to cut, what to add. You're going to tell us what you would want to do, and I'm going to fight like hell to have that happen. And that'll be the three shift that we'll be working on. But you tell us you want to do something, I'm going to consider that you're the experts. And whatever that is, I'm looking for. We have in all of our books, when we go home, a list of what's the most important thing they do from 1 to X and where you'd add back if the economy approves from 1 to X. So we can do that in a legitimate open forum. So that's what, if you guys can't provide that at subcommittee level, this thing will start to break down. Don't take anything we say as gospel. Try and let's all work on this together. This year is not an R budget, it's not a D budget, it's an Oregon budget. If we can't get these budgets coming out at 6-0, 4-0, we will have something we'll have broken down because we've got to get them across the floor. And that's going to be slightly different from the way we've historically looked at doing business, but this is the way I see where we are today. It's my opinion. But you guys have to do it. You have to work together at the sub-level to get us out of here. And we are in this. We're working pretty hard to build a 20-person budget team in the classical sense, mm-hmm. with all what all those mean that you're aware of. And that's what we need to do. And if that's not happening, we'll correct that, because that's where we just have to be at the end of the day. But we are going to be prudent. We are fiscally prudent. Yeah, we just have to do it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dukes, then Senator.
Sorry.
That's good.
Mr. Co-Chair, at what point will more detailed agency budgets be available to any of us who may want to do some extra homework? I mean, if the budget presentations that were given that don't even include FTE except as a gross number, and so if we stumbled across the program and wanted to know more. It's been difficult in past sessions to secure those, and I just wondered. It's like I asked for one this morning, and it doesn't exist yet, so I just wondered at what point.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little comment on that this morning. We had a little, in a meeting we were in this morning, we had a comment that if any agency doesn't seem to be providing all the information that we need, let us know, and we'll get it for you.
Okay, and
I don't know which.
From time to time, I've taken an agency budget and actually read the thing. Yeah. I don't recommend it to anybody, but I've done it, and so I just wondered. There is an agency. I called about this morning, and there is no governor's budget for it yet, as I understand. And so I just wondered, for those that there are, I mean, what's the timeline for all of this, and if we wanted to actually take one and read portions of it, how available?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, because the governor, this is a transition year, the governor's budget came out, it wasn't due to the legislature by law until February 1st.
Oh, okay.
So, because of a transition year. The governor did get the budget out earlier than that, in early January, and what the budget management division and the people who generate those budget books are doing right now is they're trying to catch up with the aggressive schedule of hearings. So they're doing the budgets that are scheduled first, so that you can get a budget binder on all the agencies before you. So they're scrambling right now to do that. And as they catch up with that, they will start going down that list of schedules and try to get those budgets done. They have to get them through audit, and then they have to print them. So they're working as diligently as they can.
That's part of the reason why we're having the hearings, but work sessions later, because you will be getting the books maybe just a day or so before your actual hearing, which doesn't give you a lot of time to really ask the questions you want, perhaps, just if you're particularly interested in budget. But
by the time work session occurs, yeah, you will definitely have those. And we can keep you advised of as they come in. We can let you know, because in each of the subcommittee hearing rooms, they are the budgets available to you are on shelves in there, so we can let you know as they come in.
There's also, as many members know, there's a new system we're using now. We've graduated to this Orbit system and are graduating too, and next Friday we'll have actually a little hands-on session about how to read this book. Some of the older members certainly know or think they know. I don't think I know anymore, and I would like to have a brief presentation, so I'd encourage members to come so you can get at the FTE in various subcategories. That's going to be a critical element of our whole discussion, so I'd urge members to be thinking about next Friday as a little opportunity to learn something. Yes, Senator Winters and then Senator Gordon.
Mr. Co-Chair, as you have your communication with BAM and others, you mentioned the four instructions to the agencies this morning. It would be helpful if you share those along the way so that we know that you're giving specific directions to those agencies, so when they come before us, we can just reinforce what you have stated. That would be very helpful to our...
Well, we'll have Rocco and company come up with we can give you a copy of the letter, or better yet, we'll just give you the four questions, and we'll have that at the witness table so that the agency would be under no misimpression about what they're supposed to present.
And additionally, the experience the other day with following up from last session, where we did impress on the agencies that they come back with their performance measures that should then begin to feed into where their priorities are. And when we reviewed the medical examiner's budget, they did do that. And so as other agencies are preparing their presentation, if you could just continue to reinforce that we do expect that they come in with not just saying this is our what we want to do, but we want some hard information of what have they done and what the outcomes are.
Very good. Senator Gordley, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It would be helpful if we could hear an update on the schedule and process for accessing LFO analysis of the various budgets.
Okay. Ken, you want to speak?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, as budget and management is scrambling, we are also doing that. Since we got the budget 3 weeks ago. So what we are doing is a similar thing for our analyses. We are doing them as they are scheduled and also trying to catch up. And once we have, we're going to provide those to you as much in advance as we can. And then when we're done with them, we will publish them all in a book. But until that time, we will be giving them to you individually before the hearing on the agency budget.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Right. I appreciate the committee's patience here, but it's real important that we do kind of understand this, and we're more than willing to revisit and as you challenge the assumptions, that's okay. But we should try and move forward in a thoughtful manner. We have quite a bit of work cut out for us, and it's an aggressive schedule. These guys are just killing themselves down there. They'd like to have had more information for us right out of the chute, but again, because of the transition issue, it's just not possible. So we'll certainly do our best, and if there's issues, let us know. That's a segue into performance measures. I appreciate that opportunity, Senator Winters, because this is the crux of how we deal with maybe not just this biennium, but it sets the stage for the future. I mean, this is all about the outcome measures are the reason they're before you, and they want money for a particular project. The next question you should ask them is, oh, and how does that... what's your prediction for how that's going to affect your performance measures?
conversely, if they're not asking for any more money or we cut their budget, we have to realize, just a little defense for the poor agencies, that they're not going to be able to meet some of their targets, perhaps in the manner they initially thought they would, and then we would, of course, ask them to reestablish your timeline for your priorities. So we're working together on this. This is not a punitive exercise. This is hopefully an empowering exercise for the agencies, for us, and for the taxpayers outside the building. And Senator Representative Morgan and I and others spent a lot of time on these performance measures helping DAS and LFO put this together. It has been an educational learning curve for the agencies on what we mean. And it's real important that every member here, very important that you understand this, you understand the difference between an output, an outcome, and a benchmark. And if you don't understand that by the end of this discussion, we will revisit it again. With that, Siebert, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Siebert from Legislative Fiscal Office. You should have three packets of material at your place. The first I'm going to talk about is this performance measure guidelines. And as the co-chair mentioned, this was a product of an interim group, the Performance Measure Advisory Group, that met soon after the 2001 legislative session ended to create guidelines by which agencies should create their performance measures and a process by which those measures would be reviewed. I won't spend a long time going through this, but this is a great resource to learn about performance measures. This was included in the budget instructions for every agency when they were preparing their budgets, so they all know about this information. It gives you a glossary of terms in the back. It also gives some of the rationale for the process and why it was implemented. First, I'd like to turn to page, I believe it's 17, or excuse me, page 11, C11 of the performance measures guideline. Shows a little bit of the process through flowchart of how these performance measures were created and how they were reviewed. As I said, the first box, number one, shows that the budget instructions included this guidelines. Agencies were offered technical assistance by the Oregon Progress Board before they developed their measures, and a number of agencies took advantage of that. In fact, most agencies took advantage of those presentations by the Progress Board to kind of get up to speed about what the expectations were going to be and what the criteria their measures were going to be judged by. So they all had an opportunity to attend these meetings and get some background information. The agencies then moved to number two and started developing their performance measures. These measures were presented to the Progress Board and DAS for review by a review work group, which I was a part of. The Progress Board played an important part in, and also a number of other experts in various areas of policy were assigned to each program area to review the performance measures for those agencies in that program area. And this was an ongoing, box three says it was March to July 2002. That was a very ambitious schedule because it's actually reviews have been going up. I think they're even ongoing. Agencies are still getting some feedback on the performance measures that they have presented for review. And I will go through some examples of that process and the end product later. Then the comments were given back to the agencies, and they were allowed to make adjustments. They weren't required to make adjustments based on their review by the review committee, but most agencies did. They took the advice of what was in the review by the committee and made adjustments and resubmitted. Some agencies resubmitted multiple times their measures to ensure that they pass muster for the agency and the review team. Again, these are now being assembled, and they should all be in the budget presentation that you see. As Senator Winters mentioned, the Board of Medical Examiners, which is one of the examples I have here, they had all the information they were required to. And by going through this process, I think that their measures were improved quite a bit. And so I think it's very valuable to the whole process was valuable to ensure at a minimum that everyone was speaking the same language and that everyone's measures looked the same and used the same types of terms when they were discussing this. Box number six is really where your role will be, and that is with the subcommittee's review of performance measures. Subcommittees will be expected to ratify these measures and suggest any change that they have or concerns that they have over what measures are presented. An excellent place to look for maybe some background would be the review comment sheet, which if you look at the Board of Medical Examiners, the very last page of the very small packet was their final review comments for their measures. And this form is what was given every agency, and this form morphed over time as agencies resubmitted and took the suggestions of the review committee. And everyone will have the mission of the agency at the top, and then a summary of their measures, how many measures they had, what they linked to as far as goals, and then the five criteria that the measures were judged on, and comments on how they met those criteria. The first of those is the gauge progress towards goals and pertinent benchmarks. One of the criteria, the second criteria, was that they have a few key measures. The review committee, and in fact the guidelines, suggest that these measures that are reported shouldn't be everything that the agency measures. In fact, they should only be the most important things that they measure and the most important pieces of what they do and how they measure outcome. For management purposes, agencies may have numerous performance measures that are more related to output and process that they use internally for management purposes. But those are not really what they're expected to bring forward. They're expected to bring forward measures that relate to the outcomes of the services they provide. Number three is that they conform to the standard concepts and definitions which were provided in the performance measurement guidelines. They were to ensure that everyone used the same language, that there was a good mixture of not only some outputs, but mostly emphasis on outcomes and efficiency measures, and also customer satisfaction measures. Each measure was expected to have a target, so that we knew that they weren't just measuring the process, but had some ambitious but still realistic target that they were to try to achieve and to strive for. And the fifth criteria was we looked at a data sheet that each agency was to submit to tell us where they got their information for their measures. We reviewed those and then commented if the source for that data looked like it was reliable and could be accurate. So to go to the front of that page, this is the final product for the Board of Medical Examiners. This is what you'll see in the budget binders, and this is what the review committees looked at. You'll see that at the top, the agency name, a contact person within the agency. So if you were to have any questions about these measures, a person's name and number is right there for you to contact. The next section is related Oregon benchmarks or high-level outcomes. Agencies were asked to identify benchmarks that they have a primary linkage to. And by primary linkage, we mean that their activities and their efforts could in some way affect the performance or the trend in that measure. So, for example, while almost every agency provides training, a primary link would not be to the benchmark that strives for every Oregon organization to provide 20 hours of employee training. But rather, for example, with ODOT, a primary linkage would be the benchmark that relates to road condition and the condition of pavement. So that we also looked at those and tried to discern which measures had primary linkage to these benchmarks and also other high-level outcomes, because we didn't want to limit agencies strictly to what's in the benchmarks. If there are other kinds of high-level outcomes where they may provide a piece of the reason why that would change, but not the whole picture, but it helps guide what they're doing, we ask that they identify those as well. And you'll also see the agency mission stated in that same box. And then we get into more of the meat of what the measures are. The first column is the agency goal that the measure links to. Each measure is supposed to be linked to a goal, because from the mission statement flow the goals that are more specific than just the general mission. And those, then, the measures are presented that would help measure how they're achieving that goal that they have set. So, for example, the very first measure, and you'll see PM number, that's just the measure number. The numbers before the dash are the agency's number. Every agency has a number. And this is an easy way so that if measures are cataloged by all agencies and compiled, you can separate by agency. So that the 847000 is the agency number for medical Board of Medical Examiners, and the dash one means that's their first performance measure. And their key performance measure is the first one, percentage of board issued license denials that were upheld upon appeal. So this would measure the outcome of their denials process. Are they, when they make a denial of license, is there a basis for making that denial? Because if it's appealed, is the denial upheld? And they feel that they should have a 100% target to reach, which I think probably makes a lot of sense. And so far that they've been achieving that. Another column you'll see is performance measurement since. We asked every agency to fill this out because agencies tend to refine their measures or change their measures over time. And there was really a real desire to make sure that if it's a new measure, we know about it. And we also asked why they changed the measure. Some agencies told us why. Others weren't quite as forthcoming about why the reason was for their change. And that might be something for discussion in subcommittee, is why the measures changed and why they decided they needed to change their measure. And they also, in the very last column, you'll see the lead division or unit, and it says optional. That's because that was an optional criteria. The five criteria that I talked about that were reviewed for, along with that, there were a couple of optional criteria, one of which was to identify which program or division was responsible for that measure. So you'll see that also occasionally throughout here. So this is... systematic, goes through every measure, provides information. And on the second page, you'll see another form, which is the performance measure data summary.
Senator Mitchell, I think, has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, I'm just troubled here today, I guess. I think we're missing the boat. We're talking, as this example, and I think we've got several in our hearings that we're going to hear similar to this. But this is a licensing board. And yet I don't see the criteria of the number of complaints or investigations they had, what types of complaints or investigations they were, what they dealt with, and how they dealt with, accounting of how they dealt with each one of those complaints, whether there was license denied or license pulled or those kind of things. And I think if, particularly on a licensing board, and I think this applies across all the budgets we're looking at, we need to go to the meat of what their core function is and really get a clear picture of, are they revoking licenses? What is the meat of what they're doing? These issues are very helpful, and I think they're all good, but it seems to me that, at least in this case, really missed the boat.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Meserle, I think that that's a valid statement, and I think that it's something that the subcommittee may want to pursue and maybe pursue across all licensing boards and develop some kind of maybe standard language that you're interested in seeing every agency report to you, back to you, about the same things. And your staff would certainly be willing to work to ensure that we can come up with some kind of language. We can work with these agencies. And when you are asked to ratify these measures in work session, you would then ask that they include measures such as you're suggesting, and we can have some common language that you could insert in every single licensing board that comes before you. I think that would add a lot of value, because then they would all be judged or looked at their performance across similar lines, and we can certainly help with that. There will be a section in every agency's budget report dealing with performance measures and dealing with what action the subcommittee took on those performance measures. So we can ensure that there's some language inserted in there for every board that you wish it to be inserted dealing with those types of issues. So I think that that's the part of the process that the review committee and indeed the guidelines envision for the subcommittees.
Okay. just to follow up on that a little bit, I think Senator Messler raises a very good point. No sub-chair, no committee member should feel obligated to accept these measures. And I would hope that it's been a tough process for agencies to rethink how they've done things. So believe it or not, the ones you see in front of you are actually probably much better than what many of these agencies started out with.
Yeah.
I think we should try and be encouraging to them, but not to the extent that we just let them do what they want. And if a particular subcommittee hits on something that, geez, seems obvious that maybe all licensing boards would hit, I'd hope they come to the co-chairs, we get that word out in another full committee meeting to everyone. And that's the way we'll make this a really good process so that the agencies coming back next session won't be hit with, well, geez, how can we deal with any revocation issues? Now, our answer would be, well, it was never brought up. But if we can bring that up, incorporate that in the measures, then the next body that comes on after us will have a better chance of success in holding these people to their outcomes. It's a very good comment. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate to some degree tying some of these references to the Oregon benchmark. I won't comment on the, I am commenting, but on the irony of the Oregon Progress Board being in the governor's budget but not being funded, which is the source of these benchmarks. But not that I like a lot of paper, but all of us have seen the benchmarks. But it might be beneficial for the committee to all have a current copy of those, at least copies in the committee.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Devlin, in fact, the Progress Board is working on compiling every measure that any agency has linked to in that subcommittee, a report, so that every subcommittee will have a list of the benchmarks, a short report, a little graphic about the benchmark, and a list of which agencies have linked themselves to that benchmark. That's something that is in process now, and hopefully we will get to the subcommittees before too long.
Mr. Chairman, along those same lines, though, I would like to at least have copies of the current Oregon benchmarks in the committee room. So
we'll make that happen. Good comment.
Done.
Representative Bates.
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, thank you. I'm going to follow up on Senator Messerly's comments because we both ran into the same problem on this, not only this board, but several others we looked at. And it wasn't the process. The process seemed to have been done well, and it was uniform, so you could read it quickly and easily, which I think was the effect you're looking for. But the real problem, from my point of view, the wrong question was asked, and the committee that overviewed that question didn't allow it to be asked. And as an example, we had another board whose job was to safeguard the public against unscrupulous practices, and it was a voluntary board, I mean, a voluntary licensing board. So you got licensed on a voluntary basis. If you chose not to get a license, then you could just go out there and do anything you wanted to do, and the public wasn't being protected. That question was never brought up in the benchmarks. We had to ferret that out of them and ask them of it to get that information. And it seems like some of these people maybe wanting to avoid the really tough questions about their agencies. And when we get into agencies that are huge, where you may not know the right question to ask. And that's where I'm concerned the right questions will not get asked, even though I've got a great process for looking at them. And it's the question you don't know to ask that they get you in trouble. And that means the committee that's overseeing the benchmarks needs to think what the process, not only the process is, but what is that agency supposed to be doing, and is it getting its job done?
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Bates, that's a very good comment, and it really speaks to the power of the review committee. And I think that the necessity to look at the comments, because this review committee really had no power to go in and dictate that agencies change their measures. It was strictly a voluntary process by which we provided feedback. And I think if you read those reviews, you may find some kind of leads, if you will, where we had suggested some changes.
There's some hints here.
Yes. That we had suggested some changes, and you may not find those changes in the measures that are before you. So I think that a good place to look initially would be to look at that review comment and see if there's something about particularly an area of the agency that no measure addressed. And hopefully we raise that issue, but again that really helps. But it's really your role to kind of through the ratification process impose some change on these measures.
Senator Winters.
Yeah, I'd just like to echo. I think this
body has the responsibility of asking some questions and doing some background work, you know, the performance measures and some of the work that was done to get us here today that wasn't here last session, you know, has been a big leap forward. I think we can refine and develop it, you know, each year to add some tools to it. But certainly, I think it does give us a tool to begin to ask some questions. Also, it provides us with the ability to suggest to the agency or agencies where we see something that is missing to request that they include it for the next round. This is I think it's a work in progress, and what we didn't have before, and I'm going to put it for the record because I think Senator Yee isn't here, but she pushed this on you know, throughout this building, that we needed to have a method and a way to be hold, to be able to hold agencies accountable, and that agencies come and tell us what they're doing and get some output. So I would just encourage everybody to continue to do your homework. This is not to take away from our own research and our ability to find out what's going on in the agencies. Just wanted to put that on record because we have a responsibility to dig even a little further than what they give us.
Representative Morgan.
Just to reiterate what Representative Winters is saying, I think that we need to look at this as something that is going to be developing forever, and that we're never going to reach a place where we're going to have perfect benchmarks or perfect measurements, because I think that as we evolve as a state, the needs that the agencies are going to be asked to fulfill are going to evolve along with it. And so we need to look at these as being constantly updated. And, I mean, just a real quick example here is I'm looking on the data summary for performance measures for this, and there's one of them that's the number of hits on the board's website per month. Well, they have their targets are below what they're already doing. And so this would be a definite indicator to us that we're not looking at the capabilities of the system correctly, and we need to reevaluate that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if anybody expects this to just, first of all, come out of the box and be perfect, and then continue to be perfect as we do budgets over subsequent biennia, that their expectations are really, I think, kind of out of line for the way this is really going to unfold.
Just an editorial comment there. The Oregon University system actually pioneered some of this work in state government, and we are going into uncharted territory, frankly, ladies and gentlemen. This is history-making stuff you're seeing right here. Other states have talked about it. We've talked about it when we developed our big benchmark system. This is an opportunity for this committee to for the first time link dollars to outcomes to benchmarks, which is what I think we all intend and want to do. And it'll be, like Representative Morgan says, an iterative process that goes on, and it's really our job this session, besides taking care of our horrible immediate problem, to deal with how we look at things in the future in a thoughtful and constructive manner. And it's going to be some tough questions. These benchmarks will change a little bit. The outcome measures will change a little bit. But it's a great opportunity to do things in a really thoughtful manner. Yes, Senator Carter.
Mr. Chairman, while we are discussing this issue, I just wanted to just put just a little prick in our bubble. Benchmarks have been here since 1989. It is this body, the state legislators, who have not wanted to fund benchmark programs and did not find it necessary. So I thought maybe I just might touch your bubbles a little bit.
That's very well said. Proceed. Thank you.
I would like to just clarify maybe a couple points, and the one was the comment about the change. I think that part of the problem with the performance measures over the history of this process is that the measures seem to continually change every time that the agency is coming in to talk about the measures. And conveniently, maybe, there or for whatever reason, there isn't the history of information because the measures change all the time. And I think part of the idea behind this process is that once the committee has made a recommendation on what the measures should be, the agency shouldn't change those without the approval of the subcommittee at the next go-round of their budget hearings to ensure that we have some consistency and some historical data. Otherwise, you get in a process where you never are able to look at trends and you just have a continual churning of measures. Another point I'd like to make goes back a little bit to what Senator Meserle was talking about, and that is the complaints, number of complaints by licensing boards. And while the process and traditionally most performance measurement has really centered around outcomes or the results of the programs that are offered, as staff for the budget committee, LFO has always fought hard to ensure that outputs are also an important part of the picture. Because when you're budgeting, sometimes output measures are just as important as the outcomes, because you need to know how many clients are being served. And so we don't want to diminish the role of output measures at all. And so I think that this is certainly is a very important thing for the subcommittee to look at as well. And if I could just touch, I think I've covered most of the material that you're going to see. The final packet that I had, I thought would be informative to give you some insight into kind of the process that the review committee went through. And that's the one that's entitled at the top, Original Submission. And this goes through the history of the performance measurements submitted by this agency from their original submission to the review committee. And if you just you can just read through some of the performance measures on that sheet, even the first couple, they don't really read like performance measurements. So this is what the review committee got early on. The next set, really the third page then, at the top it says early red line in quotation marks. That was the review committee's first attempt at looking at what was submitted and offering suggestions. In fact, went in and edited what they submitted to help them better conform those to what the standards would be and what the expectation was as far as using common language, so that you can kind of see the process that went through all the edits that went through these measures over time, with the edit comments on the side. To the early review, which is a few pages in after that, at the top it says early review. Along with that red line, the committee gave the agency the review. And you'll see a number of comments in here, and it's also very much longer than what the final review is, because the agency took that review and then addressed a lot of the concerns that the committee had. And it's interesting, because the original submission is probably what you would have seen the first time around during budget presentations. This is what the agency would have come in with, and you would have seen that. And then what the final review is, the change, I think, is very informative, because the change between what was originally submitted and what finally came out, there's a sea change, especially in the way the measures are worded, that allows some kind of uniformity by every measure and every agency, so that it's much easier to follow. And I think that that's probably the biggest kind of value added from this process, is at a minimum, everyone has similar-looking measures, they use the same language, and they've gone through a review system that tried to apply, you know, standards to every measure that came before them, so that you can see what the final outcome was and what the final review was. In this particular case, the measures themselves, the core measures in the original submission, were fine. A lot of it was just formatting, and the way they presented it made it very confusing and very hard to read. So that by the time it was really not as much a value judgment on what they had submitted, it's just how they had submitted it. So that by the time they were done and gone through the process, it was at least you could read it. And they were also much shorter, by the way, too. So I think that's helpful. And with that, I think that just ends pretty much what I had to talk about. If there are any other questions or concerns, again, I would suggest that you take a look at this guidelines document, because that's what the agencies were supposed to be working off of. The last few pages of that document, Appendix D, has the glossary. And so any term you see referred to, there's the glossaries in here that can give you an explanation of what's being spoken to there.
To the right.
Yes, ma'am. I apologize. I'm looking to the right. Yes, Senator Gorth, I apologize.
Thank you very much. Just a sidebar note. Senator Winters referenced Senator Yee earlier and her aggressive pursuit of performance measures for all state agencies during her tenure. I believe we're in the period of Chinese New Year. And some of us may want to contact Senator Yee and just let her know that her legacy continues and wish her well on this day.
Good comment. Representative Morgan.
The other thing I think that we need to do is recognize that this whole process was going on while we were doing five special sessions, and just to recognize the amount of work that's been put into this by the agencies and LFO and DAS as they work through what we were throwing at them and trying to do in the legislative arena in addition to doing this.
Yeah, I too would echo Representative Morgan. I really appreciate Paul's work, George Dunford's work, Jeff Tryon's work, Ken Rocco's work, Teresa McHugh's, and all the agencies that spent time, because we had critical immediate problems plus trying to develop this model for the future, and I really appreciate the excellent work. This is I think this last document tells how far we've come in the interim, and I'm hoping we'll go further here in the sessions. And it is you, the subcommittee, that make this real. This could be a big waste of time. All the agencies have a bet out how much time we're going to spend on this, and they're expecting us to spend almost none. And if we validate that, we've missed the opportunity. I would hope and pray that every subcommittee, every member, as part of their work session, would say, let's look at this, let's make it real. And subcommittees will be expected to ratify some measures. May not be exactly the same ones that came in, but some measures by the time this budget passes out. So we're really counting on you. Senator Harper said it best, the subcommittee is going to be an even much more valuable part of this process than they've ever been before. So we're really counting on everyone's active participation, and I appreciate your letting us spend some time on this.
Mr. Coach, I personally am very, very pleased, because we spent a lot of time in my subcommittee last session to say to agencies that we wanted this. We wanted, and that's part of the prompting of Senator Yee. And I know every committee she was on, she talked about performance measures. I think we budget noted all of the agencies last time. You to come back with us to let us know what the outcomes are. So it's a good start. And I want to commend the staff and everyone who worked on it, because it's what we've needed here in Oregon, and we can link them to the benchmarks. We actually have a document to talk to the public about.
Senator Harper?
How you close the deal so they know that we are serious about this is you fund or not fund based upon quantifiable metrics. And this is our first real opportunity, so this I view this as a benchmark session to understand how we did business in state government. We've got an opportunity in front of us that we've never had before, so let's take advantage of it. Let's go do it.
What is the sense of the committee here? We did have scheduled a presentation by Larry on the vacancies. We can do that next Friday, or you want to do it now? Are you engaged or getting a little tired? What's the sense of the committee? Want to do it?
Yeah.
At least have initial.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And we will ask Ms. Misswinder to come on up. Appreciate the committee's patience.
Well, we don't want to do it for a long time.
Senator Harper's hungry.
Understood. For the record, I'm Larry Nicewinder from the Legislative Fiscal Office. Senator Harper and Senator Schrader indicated, the co-chairs asked me to come to you today, talk to you briefly, emphasis on briefly, about vacant positions and give you some background information that we hope will help you as you take up in your subcommittees a deliberation on vacant positions. This is one of those areas where we hope you spend some time. The subcommittee's specific instructions as it relates to vacant positions, as you recall, on their budget review process where you got some bullets, the first bullet under personnel issues stated that under vacancies, it said, assume vacancies subject to the hiring freeze are eliminated unless the agency justifies the need to continue them in 0305. Review other vacancies not subject to the hiring freeze. So it's of critical nature. I assume it will be a very helpful tool to you in reaching your revenue growth limit targets for your subcommittees to critically review vacant positions. What I wanted to give you today briefly were two major things.
Excuse me, Larry. Questions to introduce?
Yeah. How easy to find will these be? We were just looking at a little budget the other day in subcommittee. If I figured it out correctly, there was either one position that fit this or one and a half, which was different positions. And I had a little trouble understanding. Okay. And it was recommended that we add them all back. So how easy is this to figure out?
Chair and committee members, we think this time it will be very easy. We are going to be getting payroll reports from the Department of Administrative Services. I'm working with them right now to come up with the list, if you will, that will be brought to the subcommittee. It will identify position by position what's filled, what's vacant, what's in their base budget, their current budget, and what's in a policy package. You can see what's been budgeted, what the budgeted rate is, what the actual salary rates are as of July 1, and you can focus on vacant positions and their justification for wanting those to be funded or have the capacity to fill them in the next biennium as a specific discussion. Because our analysts will be wanting that feedback from your subcommittee so that we can develop accordingly a recommended budget as well as pricing some of the options that you as subcommittee members want us to price out. So the answer is it will be
information. It will be coming.
It will be very clear.
And if you don't understand it, just let us know and we'll try and make sure. Because good
question. Some of my concerns are just places where we don't have this stuff yet.
Yeah. And a lot of it's we'll because we're transitioning. Yeah. Larry's trying to get the information. Budgets are coming slow. Senator Devlin and Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday in subcommittee, in one of the initial reviews of the Department of Administrative Services, they showed a list of a significant number of vacant positions. And while it's true that those are not directly general fund or lottery fund positions, the source of their other funds, a goodly portion of it, is general fund. But they also showed, and they expected that some of those positions would disappear, but they also showed at least a third of those in recruitment. In terms of what is then the executive's direction to agencies in terms of vacant positions about still taking them out to recruit people and extending funds there?
Okay. I was going to get to that in the presentation, but I'll go there right now. attached to the back of the packet that was handed to you are about three or four documents that summarize for you the executive branch process that was set in place through the hiring freeze. And specifically to your question, Senator Devlin, the hiring freeze was directed at general fund lottery positions. There was no restriction placed on other funded or federal funded positions. It did, however, allude to in the letter, I'm going to look for it here real quick, that it did apply to positions that were indirectly. The criteria were intended... they are intended to provide. Let's see. I'm trying to find it. I have my glasses on. In the first paragraph of this letter dated June 10th that went out under the from Mike Greenfield, it says that the emails notify executive branch agencies that the governor has imposed a formal hiring freeze for positions that are financed in full or in part with general fund or lottery fund dollars. It also includes those positions that are funded indirectly from these resources. So DAS would fall into that category. And so I'm sure there was a review process for some of those positions. But encourage you to explore that in the subcommittee for that agency. Yes, it's true that if you, in rough dollars, approximately, you know, one third of the cost of positions in DAS that are other funded, are their original source of funding is general fund. So there is a general fund impact.
Good point. Excuse me, Representative Smith.
Thank you. Regarding the reclassification of positions. This was a board, of course, budget, and they were asking for two reclassification of positions to an upper grade that meant more pay in that. How is that being dealt with?
The compensation system and its regulation is overseen by the Department of Administrative Services Human Resources, but they have delegated various responsibilities for the agencies to carry out. And in the instance of a reclass, and DAS will probably present information. Are you a member of General Government Committee?
No.
Okay, you may not hear that directly, but they'll talk about their Human Resources Division and how they go about carrying out reclasses specifically. They do ask that agencies conform to certain criteria in order to have a reclass. And during the interim, they have to be able to identify a permanent funding source for that. They also have to meet criteria that says the duties assigned to that fit the position classification specifications and in order for it to be qualified for a reclass. And then they have to have funding to do it in the interim. Yeah. Now, you'll see requests before you at this assembly because they're asking for you to approve that because they want funding to flow from that as well, either general fund dollars or other funds limitation to allow them to pay that. So it's one of those that has not been previously budgeted, and if they want to carry it on permanently, they're asking you to basically make the funding decision.
Follow up.
So are we saying that it's the preview of the subcommittee to either allow that or not allow that?
Mm-hmm. The subcommittee, the action before the subcommittee is really to decide, you know, are you going to provide the funding for that or not? Or are you going to give a direction to the agency, say, you know, we're not comfortable that we want this funding to go at that level. We'd like you to look at other options. One of the other options obviously available to them is to reassign duties or...
Follow up again?
Yeah, and another question I have regarding these agencies that are other funded, mainly from licenses and fees they collect from people who are indeed taxpayers out there. The budgets that I've seen so far, I've seen an increase in their license fee structure and so forth. Are they under the assumption because they're not generally funded budgets that this is something that is going to be okay with the co-chairs? Okay, that's the answer I wanted. Thank you very much.
Well, it's up to the subcommittee and their guidance and wisdom.
But my question goes to a term that's been used in this building is budget creep. You know, how can we put a kibosh on these agencies that are general funded, but yet allow these other little kind of agencies out here to go raise their fees at will because they're not general funded. They're funded from other sources. That's my question.
Well, that'll be a subcommittee issue, and each subcommittee will have the opportunity to address it. Senator George.
And a good question it was. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In the June 10th letter that went out from Mike Greenfield, he also has a second emphasis, and that was a freeze on all out-of-state travel. And I remember during the special sessions we had, I believe it was 50 million in-state and 80 million out-of-state or something like that. And then down below it says, right at the last paragraph, it says that criteria for out-of-state travel will be sent out in the next few days. Do we have any kind of analysis of what kind of reductions that we're talking about? Because there could be substantial numbers of dollars if those numbers last year were correct. So do we know what the criterion is now, and do we know what kind of savings might be there?
Committee Chair and committee members, I do not have the criteria with me today. I know that that was one of several avenues that agencies were directed to go to manage to various various actions that were taken in the interim. I don't have it quantified. This went out in June. Since that time, we had special session 5. And a lot of the unspecified reductions were out there, and then they've had to manage to them. In fact, the funds were taken out of their ability to spend. So, and they were basically directed to use vacancy savings, out of any and all methods to manage to that reduction. So, have they reported to us specifically what they have reduced and the savings from it? No, but it was one of the expenditures that they were required to reduce, and. I suspect the subcommittees will talk about out-of-state travel budgets when they deliberate on each agency's budget.
I would hope so. Senator Winters.
Just another question, and that's a question on the staff to supervisor ratio. Who sets that, and will be able to look at that particular piece and issue?
Senator Harper, my head.
If I could, 30 seconds. The budget review process.
You all have this document.
And you all have this document, and hopefully this is at your dais when the committee, when you're getting briefed. In the personnel arena, vacancies, which is this particular subject, FTE in positions,
assume freezing numbers of FTE, a goal of no new positions, management staff ratios, review management staff ratios by programs, require agency explanation anticipation. And another one that Joan, we talked about the reclass. We need to add that reclassification bullet in there as an interest item when you're going through the appropriations.
So the answer is yes.
And also, do not ask for co-chair's permission to go find ways to make state government better. Wait till we bitch.
Representative Morgan.
There are, I think, some pretty complicated issues around reclassing and having employees be working outside of their class. And what the subcommittees have the ability to do and what the impacts of those actions are. And I'm wondering if it may be a worthwhile education exercise for LFO to give us an overview on that issue, because it is, I think, pretty interesting. And those of us that have dipped our toes in this one, it is an interesting way for agencies to move their budgets up the dollar ladder. And there, it's kind of frustrating in some aspects about our ability to deal with it.
I would say that's a good idea. We'll put that on one of our Friday agendas. And right now, the co-chairs are struggling to try and get our hands around this in a thoughtful manner. You know, the subcommittees, you guys are taking on a lot of work here. I mean, you've got major problems. We're talking about prioritizing agencies, helping them. We're talking about performance outcomes for now and in the future. And as Representative Morgan knows and pointed out, it's very difficult to do the reclass thing without getting bogged down and examining every single position. So co-chairs with LFO's help are trying to get our hands around a way to do that. And then when we think we've got something, we'll try and bring it to the full. And then you guys can help us massage that in what's the most productive manner. Good comment.
If I could close briefly, I just wanted you to know that in this document, I think if you take the time to look through it, there's about 14 reasons why you will find vacant positions that are currently existing. Now, that's just it's helpful background for you to understand that we've got a high number now. There's lots of reasons for that. And these are some of the common things you'll hear from agencies in your specific agency-specific reviews, you know, are some of these reasons. With the 05, the decisions you'll make will determine whether or not those vacant positions continue to go forward. For every position that is in the governor's budget and then the list that you see, if they're in the budget, they have been budgeted. Even if they're vacant, they've probably been budgeted at second step. There are salary savings and related S&S savings if those vacant positions are, in fact, you know, eliminated, because in many cases you'll know when you get the list before the subcommittee whether or not there's been funds linked to those vacant positions. If they're eliminated, obviously all those things are also go away with them. So I hope this is helpful to you. I believe agencies will read this with interest as well, because they know that you know these things.
A lot of homework. Well, thank you, Larry. I appreciate that. And we can always have him back if there's questions. I'm sure there'll be questions. And different agencies will do different dances, and we'll have to decide if those dances are appropriate or not. And I'm really excited about the committee. Great questions. It seems like everyone's very engaged. You actually put up for 2 hours with this stuff, which I'm very impressed with you all, because the structural elements that we talked about are critical, not just looking at the programs, but the structural elements, so we can save good programs, quite frankly. All right. With that, any other issues? We're adjourned. Have a good weekend, everybody.